Welcome to Flipping the Script. I'm Lindsay Cuiava, your host and the artistic director of Re Theater, an online theater and education consulting company. Each week, we bring you new episodes about the theater world and theater education in an effort to revolutionize the way that theater is seen at the school and community level and inspire you to make art that matters wherever you may be. Hey, hey, everybody. Welcome back. I am coming to you this week by myself. I'm going to be talking all about show selection with you guys. I don't know about you, but show selection time is my favorite time of the year because I absolutely love finding shows that are going to work for my community and that are going to get my students excited. And I can't wait to talk about this stuff with you because I know a lot of us are right in the middle of this. And while I love it, it also can be very stressful. I mean, I think it's easier when I abstractly think and I'm like, oh my gosh, you know what? It's show selection time. I can't wait to scroll through MTI and TRW and Samuel French. But then when I actually have to go and do that, and I'm thinking about my specific school that I work with out here in Seattle, I get like very overwhelmed because, you know, there should be so many options and it seems like there's endless options. But when we actually sit down and try to find that right show, man, it is so much harder than it should be because we have so many different factors that we're trying to consider. We're trying to, you know, find something that's going to get our community at large excited, that's going to sell a lot of tickets. And we sometimes end up picking shows from a place that's, I would like to say, not as beneficiary to our students as it could be. I know some people will totally disagree with me on this. And so this podcast you might listen to and be like, well, Lindsay is full of crap and this is insanity and stupid. But I really think that when we are selecting shows, we should be predominantly focusing on our students and what best serves them, not what's going to make us the most money and sell the most tickets. So we're going to jump into all that. I'm going to go through three questions that I think are so important when going through show selection. And I'm going to also challenge you a little bit to think about the way that you currently go about selecting shows and the way that your administration might view the most valuable aspects of a show. So we're going to get into all that. But before we do, I just had a quick note about last week's episode. So last week we had Chessa Betancourt on, who I just absolutely adore. She has so much valuable information always, and her episodes are always super informative. They always challenge me. She challenges me as an artist and as a friend all the time as well. And one of the things that Chessa always says is that it's really important when we are going through the universe and navigating through this space of racism and sexism, and just as we're learning this vocabulary and trying to do better, that it's not about shaming ourselves for not knowing better. It's learning when we misstep and changing that in the future. And Chessa emailed me yesterday to just wanted to put a correction out there. So in the podcast, she used the term differently abled, which is a term that is frequently used. But she recently found out that that is not the preferred term by people who have a disability. And so she wanted to put a correction out and say that she should have said person who uses a wheelchair or person who has a this insert specific disability. And this is something that she's learned now. I mean, even since the time we recorded the podcast, and she just wanted to reiterate that everybody is always learning and that it's okay to learn. And it's what we do with that knowledge once we learn it. She said that she currently is understanding that the language that she uses is problematic. I'm sure the language that I use is crazy problematic because I look to Chessa and she's so good at this work. And I think there's nothing wrong with recognizing that the language that we use is problematic. What's problematic is then if we don't go and try to correct that and we dig our heels and are like, people are just too PC nowadays. That's what ends up being problematic there. So just another life lesson of, and something that I think is really important that we share because we're all learning just as you guys are as well. All right, so let's jump into the topic today, which is show selection and finding ways to make sure that we are picking shows that best serve our students and our community at large. So the first thing that I want to talk about before we jump into these three topics is I want to talk about the idea of audience and challenge our way of thinking about audience and who we are selecting material for. Back in December of 2017, an article was published called "The School Play is About What?" It was an article that kind of went around in theater education circles, and people talked a lot about it. It sparked some controversy, but it is one of my favorite articles that I've ever read about high school theater because it is so poignant, especially in today's world. So I don't need to tell you that in today's world, we live in a call-out society where everybody is calling out everything. It doesn't matter if you are on the more conservative side of things or if you're on the more liberal side of things. I have seen and witnessed and experienced people on both sides calling things out. And I think that we have this delusion in our head that the side that we tend to stay on, or we tend to side with more, doesn't do this thing. But you guys, let's just be honest, we all do. You think about it, you will see people who are on the more conservative side of things calling out shows like Mamma Mia, like Spamalot, like The Laramie Project, and you'll see people who are on the more liberal side of things calling out shows like Thoroughly Modern Millie and Anything Goes. I mean, we are calling each other out all the time. And while it can be exhausting, I think right now what we need to do as educators and as theater makers is be listening. We need to listen to what people are saying, why they are saying what they're saying, and why are they offended or upset by the work that we are doing. Sometimes they are just upset because they want to be upset. However, the majority of the time, I actually think that people are upset or saying these things not because they're trying to be malicious, but because they actually have a problem with the material that we are creating and the way that it's reflecting the world back at them. Sometimes, especially when it comes to race, it's unacceptable for us to be putting work on stage that is appropriating another culture. Like, I don't care why you think that you should still be able to continue to do shows that have racism in them. You shouldn't. That's just never okay. There are times where people are going to be offended by our work because it doesn't reflect the world in the way that they think it's there. And so there is a distinction. But regardless, we live in this society where people are calling things out. And right now we need to be listening and learning about why people are upset by these things and deciding when is it right to challenge and to push? Because if we don't challenge and push this feedback that we're receiving, it's going to stunt the ability for the arts to continue and for freedom of speech to stay on stage. And when do we actually need to reverse our policies? I think that if you listen to this podcast, you have no trouble understanding that I tend to be on the more liberal side of things. I think that censorship on stage is ridiculous. Let me clarify that. I think that censorship on stage is ridiculous. It's also illegal. It's for you to change scripts. However, I don't ever believe that a student should be put on stage in a way that sexualizes them ever. It's not acceptable. It's one of the predominant reasons that I have a huge problem with shows like Grease, because they just put kids on stage, and in order for the story to continue and for the story to make sense, like, we have to think about these people on the stage as sexual creatures, and that's very uncomfortable as an audience member, but it's also really uncomfortable as a student for some people. I was a student who was uncomfortable on stage a lot, but I didn't know how to actually voice that. And so I think that that's really important for us to consider, is we should never be putting students on stage in a way that sexualizes them. So I think that censorship is wrong, but I also think putting kids on stage in sexualized context is wrong. So it doesn't like necessarily contradict each other, but they are oftentimes put into the same conversation. I also think, obviously, again, you all know if you're listening to this, that I think that there's never an excuse for racism on stage. Education does not excuse that. I don't care what any licensing company says. But at the same time, I also think that we should be mindful of the choices that we're selecting and thinking of ways that the work that we select actually helps our students grow and engage in empathy. So with all that being said, this article, going back to that, that I just referenced in the Washington Post a few years back, it talks about a school who is producing a show called Girls Like That. And it's about basically slut shaming. And parents were deeply offended that this show was taking place because of the words that were being used, like slut and skank. I always have a funny reaction when people get upset about the words young people are saying. I think if you guys are an educator or a young person listening, you know that the things that parents and adults would hear in the high school hallways during passing period is usually much worse than the things that we have young people saying on stage. But I digress from that point. But the article was about this one mother's reaction to this this show being done at her school or her daughter's school. And in it, they talk a lot about this mother's process of going from, oh, I'm offended because this makes me uncomfortable as a parent to have these conversations and to know that these conversations are going on, into understanding actually why that this kind of work is super important to be doing at the high school level. And so before we jump into these three questions, I do want to go through one of the main parts of the article, which is a discussion around Howard Sherman, who is the director of the Arts Integrity Initiative at the New School College of Performing Arts and Drama. And he's also a big name, a national advocate against censorship in school theater. He is absolutely fantastic. If you do not know his work, please go like the Integrity Initiative, the Arts Integrity Initiative on Facebook. Howard Sherman is always publishing really fascinating articles on this, regardless of whether or not you live in a community that you can get away with more liberal work or not. He's a really great resource in this whole topic. So anyways, in the article, they break down Howard Sherman's idea of audience and who we should be selecting work for. So he explains audience as five concentric circles. So starting with the idea that when we select school shows, the predominant audience that we should be selecting shows for are the students who choose to do high school theater. That is our first ring, the first and most important when we're selecting school shows. The second is for the students who are in the school. The third is for the parents of those who participate. So the kids in the program, who their parents are, that's who our third consideration should be. Our fourth is for the siblings and the extended family. And the fifth is for the community at large. Now, when we are selecting material at community theaters, this is like almost, it's basically reversed. Like, because we are creating theater for the community at large. Like, that is who we are serving. But in school theater, we are serving our students. That is the people who are going to be engaging directly with the material. They are the ones who are going to be able to learn the most, who are going to be able to be impacted the most, and that's who we should be selecting material for. I think most of us, when we select material for our shows, we predominantly think first about the community at large, and that is for several reasons. First, a lot of us are selecting material specifically based on what is going to make us the most money. Now, I understand that some of us work in districts where our entire program is funded based on ticket sales. I think that is complete BS. I think I can't believe that in today's world, the arts are still so underappreciated that there are folks that are listening to this podcast and that are doing theater and working so hard to impact young people's lives, yet they have to work and they have to compromise the work that they are doing because of the fact that they have to sell X amount of tickets in order for their program to continue. That is insane. We will definitely be talking about that more on this podcast as we go, especially through the summer and we look towards next school year, because we have got to change this model. But we are selecting shows because we need to make a profit. Some of us, like I said, are doing this because we have to, because this is how our programs are funded. And other people are doing it because that's what they value the most. That is crazy to me, but when we select shows out of an idea of profit, we are selecting shows with a scarcity mentality. So we think that the number of shows that we are able to do, there just isn't that many of them. So we are automatically going into it with this nervous energy. And you guys, it is impossible long-term to create a sustainable program if all we are doing is selecting shows based on their name. It is impossible, because what you are doing then is you are selecting shows year after year that require a huge amount of effort from your staff. There are very few shows out there that can be done at a small or less large scale level that are well known. I mean, if you look at what the big shows are right now, so things like Mamma Mia and Newsies, Phantom of the Opera, any of these big shows that are, if you look at the top 10 musicals that are done by high schools, they are all giant shows that require large sets, that require your staff to be working overtime or your students to be like tasked at this high, high level. Plus, when we select shows that have big name recognition, that adds another level of stress to our students and to ourselves to emulate what is done at a professional level. I understand that we need to make money doing what we do. But I also believe that we can create programs that are more sustainable by actually creating works of quality and works that deeply connect with our students and community based on Howard Sherman's hierarchy. That is actually how we build programs that have sustainability rather than just picking shows with big names. Because we all know that a lot of us probably are in that situation where we are inheriting a program from a drama director who did that, who they selected big name shows. Some of the time they retired from teaching. Other times they got burnt out. And now we are tasked with upholding that same level. And it just becomes this giant burnout cycle. And that's not how we create sustainability. Things are also shifting. The more that millennials start to become parents and are starting to have students that are in middle schools and high schools, people don't care about excellence and about this like giant idea of putting on giant shows that have this crazy high quality. People actually care way more about relevancy than about excellence. This is actually a big debate going on right now because a big arts funding group in the UK just announced that they are shifting drastically how they fund art. And they're using the idea of excellence versus relevancy, which is problematic because who's deciding what is relevant, blah, blah, blah. But at the school level, you can prove relevancy very easily by showing this is why we selected this show, because it relates to our students in this way, and this is how it does that. So just because it was popular at the Broadway level or at the professional level doesn't mean that it's a show that is going to best serve your community. Theater has the ability to bring people together, for people to actually learn and grow from what they see on stage in a way that nothing else does in our society. I mean, even movies and TV, theater happens live in front of us. And I'm not saying that every show that we need to do needs to be this big, epic, crazy, punching, like, deep show. No! There is plenty of reason to select a show because it's fun. It could be, you know, our community went through a really traumatic incident, and this year I want to bring our community together by doing this show that is lighthearted and fun. Or I want to pick this show that's a farce because, you know what? The world is crazy and our young people are so stressed out by the madness that is going on around them that I want them to have an opportunity to laugh while in rehearsal and while in the theater space. Those are totally valid reasons, and they go beyond just selecting shows because of the name associated with it and just trying to make profit. Another reason that we end up selecting shows from this scarcity mentality or from this anxious place is because we're worried about what our community is going to say about our show. Now, you guys, everybody in the universe can find a reason why to hate your show. They can think that it is sacrilegious. They can think that it's racist. They can think that it's not, they can think it's misogynistic. They can think that it's too progressive. Everybody can find a reason to hate your show. And if you are trying to please your community at large, you're limiting yourself so, so much. If you can prove relevancy, I keep going back to this, but if you can prove relevancy, if you can use your show as a way to connect your community and use it as an educational space, you actually are going to be able to do so much more. That doesn't mean that I think every single community across America can be doing Spring Awakening. No, absolutely not. I am not saying that. There are communities that can handle that and that schools that this would be a great show for them to do, but not everybody. And that's okay. It's finding what works for your community. I mean, you guys, we're in 2019. You're in Town has been out for almost 20 years and people are still not able to produce this show because people are worried about the title. That is insane. To me, that is an opportunity and really, honestly, a time when you should be pushing back. When people tell you that you can't do You're in Town, that is a time, in my opinion, that you should be fighting. Because if we let that happen, we are going to let our community push us back into a corner where all we can produce are fluffy, feel-good, family-friendly shows that have no actual relevancy and connection to our community. I think that it's really important that when you're building out your program, that you look at your program from a four-year perspective, and every 4 years you have a super family-friendly, awesome show, but not every single year, because then you will get burnt out and you won't actually let your students engage with material that is relevant to them and that speaks to them. So we have to find those times when we are going to push back against our community. And that's not always. I do not think that as a theater educator that you need to be out there always pushing back and always forcing your community to bend to your will and to what you want to do, because that is exhausting. That might not be the fight that you need to fight. You might be able to say, okay, you won't let me do this show, I will do this other show, and then find ways in your rehearsal room to connect that show to your students in a really relevant way and have really meaningful discussions. So finding ways, though, to make sure that your community isn't backing you into a corner is really important. And I think by using this hierarchy, you're actually going to be able to flip the script a little bit and be able to prove to your administration why this matters. It's not like you're going to go from being only able to produce these squeaky clean shows to suddenly being able to do something like Spring Awakening or Hair at your school. That's not what I'm saying, but over time, you might be able to push your community a little bit further into understanding why theater is important and understand the deeper impact that theater can have. All right, so now that we've talked a little bit about audience and I've pushed kind of on that, I want to talk about three questions that I think are really vital and can be really helpful to you when selecting shows. So once you've adopted the idea that you're not selecting a show solely to make money or solely to appease your community or solely because it has this giant name recognition, and you're going to be selecting shows that really connect and relate to your student population and will help them grow as individuals and as performers, there are three questions that you can ask yourself that will help you figure out if the show that you've selected is actually a great one, or if you should continue to looking. But before we go into that, let's go ahead and just take a break for just a moment. On Saturday, April April 20th, Ree Theater is hosting our Understanding Race, Ethnicity, and Show Selection class. And you guys, I think this is the most important masterclass that we teach all year. It's hosted by Chessa Betancourt, who is a frequent guest on the podcast. If you haven't checked out episode 1 or episode 9, go check them out. They're some of our most popular episodes. And she is a total expert in this field. She's super welcoming, she's crazy knowledgeable, and you're gonna come away with so much insight into this topic, which is ever evolving and changing, and all we can do is try our best to stay on top of it. The class, like I said, is on April 20th. It's at 11 a.m. Pacific, which is 1 p.m. Central. We are going to be recording the class, so if you can't attend live, you can still get a recording of it, and you're able to submit your questions ahead of time, so you can still get your questions answered. The class is $35, but it is so worth it. Like, I cannot tell you enough that if this is the only class that you take with Ree Theater this year, please make it this one. It's totally going to change the way that you select shows and help you better engage with your community. If you haven't taken a class with Ree Theater, your first one with us is always free. You just use the code FIRSTTIME at checkout and we'll get you all set. You guys, I hope to see you next Saturday. Check out the show notes for more information and we'll see you then. All right, so let's start going through these questions. All right, so there are three big ones to ask yourself. The first one is, why this show? So, and this is an answer that, I mean, you could answer this with, why this show? Well, because it's going to make me a lot of money. Or why this show? Well, my community would really love to see it. I encourage you with all three of these questions to dig deeper. Why this show really should be answering why this show for these group of students. Like, why this show means a lot, and why is this show relevant to them? This is basically creating a defense for you for selecting this show. This will help you be able to defend yourself when going into administration. It'll be able to help you let them see why this is an important thing to you. When you really think about why this show, you're really forcing yourself to think about things from a more dramaturgical, because, well, I'm a dramaturg, but more dramaturgical or just more of a community impact point of view rather than just a big show bang impact. And I think that's really important. So why this show? And your answer to this question cannot be to make money, because I think it's fun, because I like the music, because my students really want to perform it, or because it's got a big name and everybody in town is going to want to see it, or because, and this one's very important, because I want to do it before anybody else in my town does it. That is disgusting. Let's pause on that for a minute. The amount of times that I know of schools that are doing a show or community groups because they want to do it before somebody else does it is ridiculous. Again, that is coming at things from such a negative point of view, like from a negative energy, from a scarcity mentality, that you can't create anything of good art or that matters when we're doing things from this, well, I have to beat everybody to it. That's a really poor decision when selecting shows. I know that there are communities out there, because I grew up in one, that are really toxic, where all the theater groups are competing against each other, and that's disgusting. But I know they exist, and it can be really, really tempting to give into this mentality of, well, I'm going to play the game and I'm going to do the same things that they're doing. But I challenge you, if you are in a community or even a school district that you feel like you're in competition with other people, stop caring about what they think. Honestly, stop caring. Because if you pick a show that is super relevant to your students, even though it's just been recently done in your community, people are still going to come. If you can prove that relevancy. Now, if you are picking, I don't know, something like Seussical, which has been done every 2 years in your community because you just think it's a good choice, well, then why would anybody come to that? There is this fine line of, you don't just get to pick a show arbitrarily and just because another person in the community did it and you wanted to do it, now you're just going to do it. That's disgusting and doesn't really work either. So you have to come at it from a point of relevancy. But if you want to do a show that you think is really impactful and really speaks to your students, and somebody else in your community is doing it and they're doing it from a place of like malintent or from competition, who cares? I say just do it anyways. If it really fits these three questions, and you can check yourself to make sure you are not doing it from that place of competition. So why this show? Why is this show the most important show over everything else? And I think that's important because I think a lot of times we just select shows, like we get so tired. I mean, I totally have been there where I'm just like, you know what? Every freaking show, there's something that's like keeping me from it. And now I found this show that pretty much works and that's why I'm gonna do it. Every time I've done that, it's so dumb and it just does not work. I don't enjoy doing it. My students my students, I hope, always enjoy working on the shows that I pick for them, but it doesn't just have that zing or that zap and it's not gonna engage my community. Our ticket sales usually aren't as high anyways. So pick something that you're passionate about and that you know relates to your students. Thinking about that hierarchy again, that directly relates to your students first, to your student population second, to the parents involved third, to the extended family and siblings fourth, and then finally your community. This also puts into check our own egos, which can sometimes get out of control as theater makers. And I see it all the time. I mean, I am not trying to be mean here, but I talk to a lot of theater educators and I communicate with a lot of them. I work with a lot of them. And I'd like to think that the folks that I work with really closely are super baller and just doing totally amazing work in their communities. And really don't act this way. But there are a lot of theater teachers out there who get these giant horse blinders on that they think, nope, I know the right way to do everything. I don't need to listen to anybody. And they start to create work and they almost sort of start to play like universe master in their program where I'm selecting this work because it's something I'm really passionate about. It's a passion project for me. I think it's really important. And we just get these horse blinders. And you guys, it's so gross. Like, I can't tell you the amount of teachers that I've talked to who, like, will sit there and just 100% tune out everything I say because all they want to do is just continue to create the work that they create and don't actually want to expand or don't actually want to grow as an educator or as a theater maker. It is absolutely frustrating. And I think that if you listen to this podcast, you're not one of those people, which is super cool. So I'm preaching to the choir. But by being able to answer why this show, it puts our ego into question because we can't just do a show because it's a passion project for us. Now, every once in a while, totally, because I think that if we think back about like our passion project shows, they usually come from a place of like deep connection for us. And we then can find ways that these shows deeply connect with our students. I mean, Newsies, I would totally love to direct Newsies someday because as a young person, I was obsessed with it. Like, I mean, I did a giant history project that took all year in eighth grade on it. And it's a show that I grew up watching countless times. But then that wouldn't be the reason that I'd write down why this show. I would want to find a way that it then instead relates to my students so that they can be in tandem together. So why this show is the first question that you want to answer. The second question is why now? Why now over doing this 3 years from now? Why does it matter? Why are these group of students the students that need to tell this story? That's really, really important. Because, I mean, all of us know our program shifts so much every year based on who our incoming freshmen are, who are outgoing seniors, who, I mean, if we're working at the middle school level, wow. I mean, middle school is such an awesome age to work with, but I think it's the most chaotic because our students are in such like a physical transition that like 1 year we could have like 10 boys in the program who sing like angels. In the next year, that same 10 are there and they can't sing a note because their voices are changing. So we have to really think about why is this group of students the right group of students to be performing this show? And this is where we catch ourselves because sometimes we'll be like, this is an amazing show. And we answer why this show. And we have this beautiful response for it. But then we get why now. And we start to actually think about why this group of students and why does it need to be produced now. And we realize, oh, okay, so I want to do something, I want to do Miss Saigon, and it would relate to my students and be really great for my community, but I actually don't have the right group of students to be telling that story. So you can't, like, you, this is where you really start to check yourself on the logistics of your program and the capabilities of your students and of the staff that surround you. So why now? You might want to do a show that has an insane set, something like Phantom of the Opera. Phantom of the Opera, you might be like, I want to do this show. I mean, I'm going to do a really bad job of explaining the why this show now answer, because I actually think Phantom of the Opera, I mean, it's probably like one of my least favorite shows. I'm sure Marcus Newton, who was on another episode with me, him and I are going to be doing an episode where we debate Phantom of the Opera, because I just think it is ridiculous. Like, it makes no sense. The timeline makes absolutely no sense. I don't understand why I'm watching this show ever. But anyways, so say you want to do Phantom of the Opera and you found a brilliant response to answering the why this show, and you've like related it to your community and to your students, but you get to the why now. I mean, one of the reasons you might want to do it that's totally valid is because this group of students deeply relates to it in X amount of ways. We have a dozen girls who are taking ballet, who are absolutely incredible, that we could showcase their talents in this. We have a set designer who, this is their last year with the program. They are absolutely incredible, and they can design the heck out of this show. It could also be you as a director are ready to take on the challenge of directing an operetta, because pause on that for a second. I think that a lot of us don't realize absolutely how difficult directing an opera or an operetta is. It's so much more difficult than directing a book musical, I think, because you have so many more moving pieces and so many things that you have to consider that you don't during a book show. But that could be why now. I mean, as long as in your why now answer, you showcase, you justify because your students have the talent, and because your production team has the talent, and because this is the exact group of students that need to tell it because the story relates to them in some deep way. It can't be, well, we're going to do Newsies because all of my seniors asked me to do it. Yeah, okay, cool. Like, if we did every show that our senior class asks us to do every single year, I'm sorry, we probably wouldn't be doing like super impactful work always, unless we've trained our students to like really think deeply about the work. And if you've done that, virtual high five to you, because that is amazing. So we can't just always like do it because that's what they want to do. We have to really think about why it deeply connects to them. And sometimes, like, I think you can structure your program so that your students start to think about things deeply right away. I mean, you can start doing things in your program, like where you're having like weekly discussions about a theme of the show and letting students have like small circle discussions and big group discussions and actually talk about the ways that, like, our shows are relevant to us. So then your students might actually start to think that way, and they'll select and suggest shows to you that have these impacts as well. But so you have to really think about why now from a deeper level. I mean, as I said already, it's like 10 times. All of these answers have to be from a place of actual like introspection and from a place of deeper than just the surface level. Okay, so why this show? So say, like, give us that justification. Why is this show amazing? Why now? Show us like the urgency and the need for why this relates deeply to your community, why it relates deeply to your students, and why your program, like this group of people that's working on it this year, are the right ones to produce it. And then finally, the third question is why here? And that, like, so this is the point, I guess I should edit myself. In the last question I said, why relate to your community? So that doesn't need to be answered in question two. That actually needs to be answered in question three. So why here? Like, why is your school the right school to be telling this story? I grew up in a town where there were three big high schools and I think two smaller parochial schools. And all of us had very different populations, and all of us produced really different work. And I think that work related to us in different ways. I mean, the school that I went to was like a farm school, and it was like where all the suburbs of the main city and all the farm kids went. And so when I was in school, we produced a lot of Golden Age musicals, which I'm looking back on, I used to always be like, ugh, so annoying that we did. But now I actually really think that it's important because like that was what, in order to grow the program, like we had to get this more conservative population on board with the material that we were doing. And these like more classic stories did relate to the student population in a way that helped us get into the music. And then by the time that director retired from doing shows, I mean, we were doing pretty intense work. Like the students produced Aida, they produced Drowsy Chaperone, which I'm not saying is intense, but like very different than something like Anything Goes. But you have to understand your community and you have to understand why is it important to do this show right here, right now? This also then goes back to in the beginning, I was talking about the idea of knowing when do you push to have your show produced and when do you just kind of fold and put that on the back burner for another year, but still have a pick a show that you have relevancy with. So why here is where we finally get to that fifth circle, that that community engagement. I guess it's like the fourth and fifth circle there of why is this show super important? I mean, I think why here can also be answered like if you want to do something like Seussical, it's why here, why not? Like right now? Well, because our program is getting smaller and we want to grow our program and get the arts in the middle school up higher. We want to get like people at the elementary school level to start thinking about theater and the performing arts, and we're going to take Seussical on the road and go do some numbers at all the elementary schools and really engage them in that way. That's fine. Like, that's a great answer, in fact. So the three questions, just to recap, are why this show, why now, and why here? If you can answer these three questions, and if you can answer them all from an authentic, non-surface level point of view, then this show is probably a great show for you. I encourage you, if you are in the middle of show selection, I would love if you want to share these, your answers with me, if you want to send them to me on Instagram, if you want to tag hashtag flipping the script in your story, or if you want to send them to me via email, which you can find in the show notes. I would love to hear these because I think that these three questions will really help you get at the meat of your show and also help give you some focus so you don't feel like you have endless options available to you, but you don't quite know where to go in order to start. All right, so those three questions I'm really hoping help give you some clarity about everything that you need to do with show selection. I mean, obviously it's not everything you need to do, but can kind of help be a guidepost for you. The last thing I want to pause on before we wrap up this episode is I want to talk about the idea of nostalgia and the idea of passive versus engaged audiences. So one thing that I see happen all the time, and I think we all have done this, is we pick a show from a point of view of nostalgia, where we're like, oh, I grew up listening to this show, or I grew up watching The Sound of Music every December 28th on TV with my family, so I want to produce The Sound of Music, or I want to do Grease because it's a show that I loved watching when I was growing up and all my friends did and all my family, blah, blah, blah. So we pick a show because we're nostalgic for it, or we pick a show that's from the Golden Age because we know as a society they held this idea of nostalgia. I mean, these old musicals like show America in a different time when things were quote unquote easier, which is problematic. I mean, I won't unpack all of that, but that we just are like, you know what? This show is beautiful and just really wholesome. And I want to just push on this because I actually encourage you to remember that musical theater is always an act of resistance or a radical act in some way. now I sound kind of crazy, but it's true. I mean, musical theater always has been produced from a point of view of trying to change society. I mean, if we look back, one of the first musicals that is considered a musical is Showboat. And Showboat was crazy radical because it had white and black actors on stage together telling the same story. To us today, it's really problematic. It seems really racist. But at the time, like, this was revolutionary. Richard Rodgers and Oscar Hammerstein really, truly were like social activists. I mean, especially Hammerstein. The work that they created was not this like wholesome, family-friendly, beautiful, easy to access work. I mean, if we look back at their work, today we see a lot of problems with it, and I totally am on board with calling them out for those problems. But Oklahoma, which I'm so excited for this new revival, I cannot wait to go see. But Oklahoma is like not this like happy-go-lucky show at all. I mean, if you think about it, the story of Oklahoma is about a woman who is being stalked or obsessed over by a quote-unquote dangerous man who, in order to ensure her safety and to ensure that she isn't, I mean, people are worried that she's going to be murdered in the show or raped. And in order to do that, another man has to win her basket at this auction so that he is able to protect her. I mean, that is not some like, oh, lovely, happy-go-lucky story. Like, that's really high stakes. I mean, also at the same time in it, you've got one of the main characters encouraging another main character that they should hang themselves. There's an entire song about it. And then, I mean, my favorite thing to point out in this show, and it's not just because I played her in high school, but, I mean, Ado Annie sits on stage and scoffs at traditional society. Like, she sings a song, I Can't Say No. Like, she is like, I don't want to fit into social norms. I am totally in power of my sexuality, and I'm going to go and do these things. And that is what the whole show is about. But her storyline, especially with Will, because Will is doing the exact same things that Ado Annie is doing, and he is asking her to change her way of life when he's not going to do the same. I mean, the whole song, All or Nothing, is he's saying, well, you got to change your ways if you're going to be with me. And then she's like, you have to change your ways or I'm not going to change mine. So Oklahoma isn't this like super happy-go-lucky show. It's really intense and it has this really dark underbelly to it, but it also has a lot of themes that really relate to our students. I mean, I could talk about Oklahoma for forever. But Oklahoma, I mean, if we look at things like South Pacific, I mean, just think, like, South Pacific was written 4 years after World War II, and it tackles the world, like, it tackles the war, it tackles the idea of white culture invading other cultures abroad, it talks about racism, it talks about all these crazy things, yet, nowadays, we look at South Pacific, we look at I mean, The King and I has a lot of problems in it, for sure. All of these shows, I mean, even Sound of Music is about, like, escaping Nazi Germany. I mean, there is crazy stuff in there as well. And we think, oh, well, it's an old show. It's all fine. It's all okay. We don't need to worry about the content. I mean, and we do. Like, there are some shows that I think that we should be thinking about the content and the stories that we're telling. I mean, things like Bye Bye Birdie. I mean, I despise that show, not because I just think it's not like super well written, but I mean, the entire premise, like the song, How Lucky to Be a Woman, you're having a young woman stand on stage and sing about like her only purpose in life is to get pinned so that she can then go get married and please a man and be the perfect wife. Like, I mean, I don't know this because I haven't looked at the script in a very long time of Bye Bye Birdie, but I don't know if you can do the show very satirically with like a wink to the audience, but it would be difficult, like just to produce it how it is ridiculous. I mean, also think about the Shriner scene. I mean, Bye Bye Birdie just never ends. And there's all these scenes that pop up and I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is still happening. Like there's the stupid ice house stuff. The Shriner scene is disgusting. Like you have this woman who goes into, this like Latino woman who goes into a room of men who then like fondle and like fawn over her. And it's just, they like are like overcome with desire for her. Disgusting, stupid. And so we have this idea that, well, if our grandparents listened to it, it must be okay. Like if our families grew up listening to it, it must be okay. If I grew up listening to it, it must be okay. It must be cleaner than what's being made today. I mean, it kind of reminds me of how when I was a kid, my parents wouldn't let me listen to any pop music. They wouldn't let me listen to any of that 90s hip hop and Britney Spears because it was so inappropriate. But then they would let me listen to like 80s and 70s music, like hair band music. I remember I asked them at one point, I was like 8 or 9, and I was like, Mom, how am I ever going to have oldies if you don't let me listen to music? And then she finally started to let me like listen to music that was popular then. But I remember like when I got to be like a teenager, and now especially, like one of my favorite things to do is go back and listen to the lyrics of songs that I either grew up listening to or my parents had me grow up listening to. And like, I mean, like Cherry Pie, is that by Whitesnake? I don't remember. But like, I remember listening to that song as a child, and that song is so inappropriate. I mean, I like laugh now at the like hip hop music that I grew up listening to and like remember singing in like the high school gym. Like, I'm like, wow, those words are so awful and inappropriate. But I didn't know it because I grew up with this like nostalgic idea around this music. And I think it's the same idea with musicals. Now, if we grew up with this musical, it must be appropriate, it must be fine, and we don't actually think about the story that we're telling, and we don't actually think about what the characters are saying. And so what we end up doing is we end up creating passive theater, where we are inviting our audiences to come in and just relive their nostalgia. We're just being like, oh, just come listen and find your favorite song and remember how much joy it brings you. Come and laugh at these hilarious jokes that you've always laughed at, but don't actually think about this story. I mean, I think that's like why, I mean, Grease, you just hear so many horror stories of people producing this show and then the community being like, wait, excuse me, what were those words that they were saying in Grease Lightning? I don't remember ever those being the same words. And then you're like, well, actually, it's the exact same as the movie. That song in particular. People don't realize the crazy things that we put on stage sometimes. Until they actually see it happening in front of them, and it brings them out of that nostalgia and into a here and now where they're actually listening to the words. And so when we direct and create work from this passive idea, we don't actually ask our audiences to join us. We don't actually ask them to be changed. We don't ask them to be a part of the experience. We're just letting them live in their own world. So I think that Golden Age musicals get a bad rap from both being like non-relating to students anymore, because I know like all of my students, it's very funny. So there's going to be an episode coming up where I interview two of my students, and they talk about how Guys and Dolls is like a stupid show because it doesn't relate to them, because it's like 50-year-old men in this show. And I don't remember if I talked about it on the podcast or if it was after. And I was like, you know that in that show, like those people are in their like early 20s to mid 20s. Like they are, most of the characters aren't actually that old. But we have this, like, but they just like always grew up like it was like the old person show and all that. So they didn't realize that this story actually has a lot to do with young people. And so we think that it doesn't relate to young people, or we just think that it's like this like nice, wholesome family show. And that's just not what musical theater is in a lot of ways. I mean, I think the idea of like the wholesome family show really started to come out when Disney started to take over Broadway, or started to be really predominant on Broadway. Theater has always been a little risque because that's just always how theater has been. And so when we direct and we select shows from this passive idea, Golden Age musicals or old shows get a bad rap, or even shows that have like big name recognition. Like I can't tell you the amount of shows that productions I've seen of Rent that just like totally miss the entire point of what Rent is, because everyone's just like doing it from a point of view of nostalgia or trying to copy what originally happened, or doing it for sensationalism, which I also will have a podcast on sensationalism very soon. And so when we do shows from that point of view, we just are asking our students, our audiences, to be passive. So what I encourage you to do when you're selecting a show, don't brush something off because it doesn't seem relatable to your students at first glance, especially if it's something that's older. Instead, I encourage you to look at how can you, whatever show you pick, can you create an engaged audience versus a passive? How can you tell this story in a way that's different, right? I mean, I think that's a really important, I mean, part of like that second question, the why now, really can be answered on, we have to do it now because we're gonna tell it through this very different way because we have these people here. So how can you tell this story in a way that's totally unique to your community? You're not trying to emulate or copy other people. I mean, that's just like, I mean, that's like illegal. Right. I mean, there was just a production that was shut down in Ohio recently because they plagiarized a set. So, I mean, don't try to copy the Broadway production. You aren't Broadway. And actually, that's good because the work that you're doing has an ability to impact people at a much deeper level than Broadway does, because they're appealing to the masses. But so how can you deeply engage your community and tell this story in a way that resonates with them? How can you find those ways to tell the story in a new light? I mean, Kate Yeager was on a few episodes ago talking about the production of Les Mis that she worked on. And she told it from the point of view, not of forgiveness, that which usually people tell it from, but fighting against systems of oppression. It changed the show quite a bit. And it was still the same show. So I encourage you to not just select material from a nostalgic point of view or to direct from it as either. All right. That is all I have. I mean, I feel like mind dumped all these different things about show selection, but I really do hope that they were helpful for you. If you are in the middle of show selection right now, I would love to hear from you. Shoot me an email. I'd love to know kind of what you're thinking about doing, what ideas you're having. If you are on Instagram, I am going to be talking about show selection all month, like to a nauseating extent, because I think it's really important and I want to help you create opportunities for your students that are really engaging and not just another show for them to do. Contact me. I mean, like, I would love to hear. We're going to be asking questions on Facebook and Instagram. Like, engage with us. Let us know what you're thinking. We're totally open and want to hear. As you heard earlier, Chessa Bentancourt is going to be doing a class all about show selection and ethnicity and race and how that they factor into that process, which, you guys, I know it's so easy to just dig your heels in and be like, I'm not doing this because it's people are too PC and I think that things are going to go back to being the way that they were. And I don't think that that's going to happen. I really don't. And if you're going to take any class with ReTheater, please take this one. If you've never taken a class with us, your first class is always free. You can use the code FIRSTTIME at checkout in order to sign up. It's going to be a really informative class, and the way that Chessa teaches it is very open and very welcoming. This class is not about shaming anybody for the ideas that we have. It's about learning and growing together. I mean, I've made horrible mistakes. I mean, as I said in the last episode, I worked in a production of Miss Saigon that had 3 Asian folks in it, and none of them were the leads. And I've done way worse things and been a part of productions that did way worse things as well. And this is just a really important topic. And so we want to help you with the show selection stuff. We want to help make sure that you're going to get yourself in trouble or have your students be upset with you. And so, yeah, we want to help. Let me know how I can. I'm glad that you tuned in to this episode. If you have any questions, like I said, feel free to shoot us an email. Otherwise, we'll be back next week with another awesome episode that I can't wait to share with you. All right, everybody, have a good week. Bye. Episode. If you enjoyed it, I would love if you would leave us a review or rate us on iTunes or Stitcher, or share us with your friends on social media so that we are able to help spread the word around Flipping the Script and inspire people to make art that matters across the world. As a thank you for taking the time to review us and share us, each month I'm going to be giving away a theater swag gift basket. All that you need to do in order to win is just share us and review us, and every month I'm going to select a review or a share at random, read it on the air, and if it's yours, you will be the lucky winner of this awesome theater swag bag, which is going to have so much stuff in it that's like essential for the theater nerd, no matter if you're a teacher or student or just an enthusiast. If you want to find out more about ReTheater and our programs, our online classes, and our community for educators, just go to www.retheaterco.com. Theater is spelled with an R-E. Or you can follow us on Facebook at ReTheater. If you want to know about the work that I'm up to and find out more about ReTheater, you can follow me on Instagram. I'm there all the time giving out lots of tips and ideas and just sharing about how awesome theater education is. You can follow me at @Lindsay_CuiavaBar. If you have any questions about today's episode or thoughts you'd like to share with us, or maybe you have some topics you'd like to see us cover in the future, I would totally love to hear from you. You can send me an email anytime at lindsay@retheaterco.com. Just make sure you spell Lindsay, A-Y, and I look forward to hearing from you. As always, thanks for listening, and keep on making art that matters.